Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is a Thursday. We are absolutely packed today. Greg Cosell, Greg Jennings, Greg Olson, Greg Show. Live in L.A., it's The Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Very, very exciting day today. Very exciting. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. It's, you know, it's the little things for me. Like lemon pepper wings and a very busy NFL news day.
Wow.
This is like this morning, like, yes.
So Deshaun Watson has officially requested a trade from the Texans per league sources. Now, let's just start with this. This doesn't happen. You sign in the NFL after your contract. They extend you. Then you're franchise tagged. You don't get 25-year-old star quarterbacks on the market. This does not happen. Ever. The last, quote, star quarterback on the market was Kirk Cousins. All right. In the history of the NFL, this doesn't happen. He wants out. So now, that's the first thing. This is unbelievable. The second thing is this. He's got a no trade clause. He has to approve it. So let's just not make up crazy scenarios. He's not going where he doesn't want to go. There are 8 teams that will be at least talking about it. I'm not going to count the Colts, because the Texans are not going to trade him in division and play him twice a year. I'm not counting them. And I'm not counting the Saints, who are $100 million over the cap, so they can't sign an expensive quarterback. Okay, just take them out. Here's the 8. Jets, Miami, New England, Carolina, 49ers, Washington, and Chicago. Now, I'm going to put them in order. As if I'm Deshaun Watson. I'm not saying the team that has the picks that can make it work. I'm Deshaun Watson. What would I choose based on a variety of factors? Number one would be San Francisco by a mile. Okay, they are, without Deshaun Watson, a top 5 Super Bowl favorite next year. They just had bad injuries. They lost their quarterback. They are stacked, and they're not real happy with Jimmy Garoppolo. So in terms of, I just want to go to a team that can win, they got everything. They are, and after San Francisco, the next 7 I'm going to list, there's a but. I'm Deshaun Watson. I'd go Miami second. Why? I got a really good defense and a really good coach. But they are rebuilding their offensive line. But I don't love their ownership group. Number 3 would be New England. Best football coach ever. Above average defense. Offensive line talent's not bad at all, but they have no weapons. And that division's getting better. They got no weapons. They got no tight ends. They got no wide receivers. They have no star backs. Number 4 would be Washington, but don't love the owner. A lot of dysfunction. You get a great defense, bunch of first-round picks up front. You got a really good young receiver. And you get a grown-up, an adult, Ron Rivera, who's got a long contract. So he's going to be there a while. That gives me coaching stability. Number 5, and then it gets interesting. Denver is interesting. I really like their young tight end. I really like their young receivers. They've got some really interesting pieces on this roster. I really like them. But Vic Fangio's in his 60s. He's probably an 0-4 start from being fired. John Elway is no longer the GM. They've hired a new guy. But I do like their wide receiving weapon talent. Number 6, I'd go Chicago. Love their defense. Love the city. But the GM and the coach are on the hot seat. They could both be gone by Thanksgiving. I don't like that instability. I get to face Aaron Rodgers twice a year. Be good for my PR, my billboard campaigns. I mean, let's face it, twice a year I'm in the biggest NFL game of the weekend. That'd be awesome for my marketing, my PR. Number 7, Carolina. I really like their coach, and they got some nice weapons. But they're in a total rebuild. You're going to be in shootouts almost every week. Christian McCaffrey, sensational. I really like their weapons, but it's a rebuild. It's a rebuild job. And we don't know if Matt Rhule's great yet. I think he is, but I don't know he is. And then number eight, and this is why it's fantastic theater. The Jets have nothing I would want. I want a dependable head coach, ownership, and front office stability and weapons. Jets don't have any of it. But of all the teams, this works best. They could give the Texans Sam Darnold. They could give the Texans Sam Darnold and the number two pick, so you get Zach Wilson. The Jets makes the most sense by a mile, and I think Deshaun would make it work. And Deshaun has said, I like Robert Saleh. But what is fascinating about this, the Jets are the worst choice, but they're the one organization that the Texans can call and get a future star quarterback, a bunch of first, second, and third round picks. I don't have to play him in division. I won't have to see him very often. In fact, I could get Sam Darnold for a year and a number two pick. And then when the number two pick's ready to play, I could trade Sam Darnold and get more picks. The Jets make the most sense by a mile, and I think it would be fascinating. But in terms of I'm Deshaun Watson and what I as a quarterback would want, Jets would be eighth. I mean, seriously, ownership do you trust? Front office do you know? Robert Saleh, who knows? Weapons bad, O-line bad. They have one workable running back. They got nothing. But my guess is this morning, the Jets are in the hunt very early for this. We got a 25-year-old star quarterback available to the market. That does not happen in the National Football League. It does not happen. It's crazy. The last star available was Kirk Cousins. All right, so yesterday I talked about something. I called it the mythology of talent. I always hear about talent. Oh, this guy's talented. That guy's talented. Do you win games? So according to a story, a third of NFL teams, a third, 10, 11, have inquired about trading for Matt Stafford. Last 3 years, 14 and 33. But he's talented. So Deshaun Watson, who had a coach that got fired and a bad defense and a shaky O-line, last 3 years, 25-22, a division title and a playoff win. Carson Wentz, last 2 years, won a division. Coach got fired, no weapons, and bizarre injuries. Matt Stafford's gone 12 years. He's had four winning seasons. I'm not asking for the Super Bowl. I'm not asking for the NFC Championship. But 12 years? No division titles, no playoff wins. Yeah, I know he's talented, but even at Georgia, 9-4 1 year, 10-3. Andrew Luck went to Stanford with Stanford's talent. In his last 2 years, he was 23-3. Even when he had Georgia talent, he was losing 3-4 games a year. Andy Dalton made the playoffs 5 times. Andy Dalton has the Steelers and Ravens in his division. Mitch Trubisky, in Matt's division, has won it 2 of the last 3 years. And we don't know if he has the right coach, the right GM, or anything on offense. Sometimes you got to show me you can win. Andrew Luck had nothing. Nothing. When you tell me Matt Stafford had nothing. He went 11-5, 11-5, 11-5 AFC Championship. Deshaun Watson keeps winning games. He's had nothing but dysfunction. Even in his own division against the Bears and Vikings, let's take Aaron Rodgers out of it. Okay, so he can't beat Aaron Rodgers. Against the Bears and Vikings, he's 19-22. It reminds me, in the NBA, there's players like this. Everybody keeps telling me, I remember Tracy McGrady. Oh my God, he's got so much talent. And Tracy's a nice guy, I've met him. Oh my God, Tracy McGrady's got great talent. He never won a playoff series. Oh, Zach LaVine. Oh my God, Zach LaVine. Oh, but how come he's never on winning teams? Well, Colin, he doesn't have a lot to work with. Chris Paul wins everywhere. In a league of tall men, he's 6'2.5". Chris Paul wins everywhere. Chris Paul went to Oklahoma City. Joy and I watched. They were tanking. They were tanking. And they had nobody except Chris Paul. And they ended up what? Hottest team in the NBA the last month and a number 4 or 5 seed. In fact, they traded Chris Paul from Oklahoma City because he was screwing up their tanking. Then they trade him to a team that hasn't won in years, Phoenix. Now they're winning. Damian Lillard. Portland's not a hot free agent market. The second best player they have is a lesser version of Damian Lillard. He gets to the conference championship. Damian Lillard wins games. He doesn't have a hot free agent market. He doesn't have a dominating cohort. How the hell did they get to the playoffs last year? They had no wings. In the West, they had no wing defenders. But Chris Paul figures out ways to win. DeShaun wins. Went, as much as we criticize him, wins. Damian Lillard wins. After a while, you got to give me more than talent. Because I'm the coach here. Everybody's going, oh, that guy's got talent. That guy's got talent. That gets coaches fired. You got talent, gets coaches fired. Chris Paul just won. Damian Lillard wins. DeShaun Watson wins. Wentz, maybe fourth of those four. He was won a lot of games with a mess around him. I mean, think about this. Since Matt Stafford came into the NFC North, Mitch Trubisky's won a division twice. Case Keenum, Jay Cutler, and Teddy Bridgewater. 12 years, you got to give me one. Aaron Rodgers has been hurt twice. You got to give me one. I got nothing against Matt Stafford. I think he's talented. But boy, if a third of the league is after him, it shows you the mythology of talent. At some point, 12 years, you got to start winning more games.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So the Houston Texans' dysfunction remains embarrassing. It's cult-ish. So they just hired David Culley. He's 65. He's been in the NFL 27 years as a coach. He's never been offered a coordinator job. That's the new coach. Tim Graham, who covers the Bills, a Buffalo sports writer, chatted last night with somebody who worked closely with David Culley when he worked in Buffalo. Tim Graham said, "What kind of a head coach do you think he'll be? He's an awesome person." Silence. "What about as a coach?" "Terrific guy." "What impact did he have in Buffalo?" "A great guy." Silence. Folks, late bloomer is overrated. In comedy, there's one exception, Rodney Dangerfield. The great comedians, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, Seinfeld, Jon Stewart, were noticed in their early 20s and crushing it by their late 20s. In American Idol, ever notice the stars are young? There are no late bloomers. John Madden would be one of the all-time great coaches, but Madden, former coach of the Raiders, had an intense fear of flying. So he retired early to be a broadcaster, where he took a Winnebago, the Madden Mobile, around the country. John Madden was brilliant. He was hired at 32 as a head coach of, at the time, the Raiders, a marquee franchise. Nobody hired people in their early 40s. Madden got it at 32. Andy Reid, a head coach at 40. Belichick, 39. Saban, 36. Urban in his 30s. Tomlin, early 30s. Don Shula, early 30s. Everybody in America, every industry, mine, yours, NFL, is seeking great young talent. Nobody slips through the cracks for 35 years. I'm sure he's a terrific guy. This is a bad hire. Never been offered a coordinator. It just doesn't work that way. It just does not work that way in the NFL. Sean McVay had teams vying on him, Shanahan teams vying on him, Tomlin, Shula, Belichick, Andy Reid. That doesn't mean you can't be fired. It can be a bad fit. Pete Carroll was. He got hired again. He was fired. He got hired again and again. Like, come on, man. This is the late bloomer thing, and I get it. Maybe this is a bad organization that just kept hearing no thanks. That's what happened here. Houston, people wanted Eric Bieniemy to get it. He should thank his lucky stars he didn't take it. He was smart enough to not take it. This is a bad organization. They were left with this coach. This was not their first choice. They got two words for the last 3 weeks. No thanks. And you're wondering why Deshaun Watson wants out. This is what they get. He's a nice guy. A lot of nice guys.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I've known Greg Olson for a long time. Used to bring him on the show at the other place in here. Warms my heart. He is now a part of Fox Sports NFL analyst. Really smart guy. Really thoughtful guy. I do feel some guilt because he was down to Buffalo and Seattle, and I texted him twice pushing him to go to Seattle, and it was Buffalo that made the NFC Championship, so I am riddled with guilt. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Hopefully it didn't sever our relationship. That was a really bad move by me. I feel terrible. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I appreciate it. That I look back on those texts, and I put a lot of stock in what you thought, but I'm glad I still went to Seattle. It was a good experience. I was happy for Buffalo. I had a lot of friends there, had a lot of people there, but I'd be lying to you if I said I wasn't having a little bit of buyer's remorse, you know?
So Deshaun Watson is 25 and now potentially on the market, which, as you know, Greg, because of the franchise tag, it just doesn't happen. This is not what happens in the NFL, especially for star quarterbacks. So if you were his agent or Deshaun, what would be attractive to you and what would worry you? Is there something that you would say, okay, I'm not going there? And is there something that maybe that's underrated that would attract you to a team?
Yeah, so first and foremost, he's leaving Houston because he just views it as just like institutional chaos. I think that's really the reason they're in this predicament. They've traded away so many good players. There was really no organizational structure. There was no GM. The head coach was the GM. There was some kind of infighting amongst higher executive levels about who was in charge and who was making decisions. And I think he's just like, I'm too young. I'm too talented. I have too many things I want to accomplish. I can't be around this nonsense. So here he is forcing his way out, which is, you know, almost unheard of in today's NFL for a young star quarterback to be available, let alone publicly be asking for his trade. I think when you go down the line, the clearest fit as far as offensive head coach, young minded, offensive kind of innovative head coach, team built to win, was just in the Super Bowl a year ago, is the 49ers. I think San Francisco, if they could somehow land him, I think they immediately go to the top of the list, at least in the NFC,
yeah,
and saying that they're the favorite, right? I mean, we just saw what that team was able to do when they were healthy, the young defense that you're not really paying anybody much. I mean, to me, that's the team. Again, whether that's possible or not, I think that's obviously the number one fit. And again, with Kyle Shanahan and an offensive young-minded head coach, I think that's the dream, right? That's what every young quarterback is looking for.
But there's a couple issues I want to talk to you about. You know the game behind the game in the NFL. Okay, there's the game, and then there's stuff that's going on that you've been around the league, you get it. So I theorize that the Rams have gone public with this Jared Goff stuff, McVay and Snead, in harmony. And they've done it not because he's a bad kid, but because they did him a solid by signing him early. They're now trapped by his contract. He's regressed. And they went to the agent and said, okay, let's redo the contract. And the agent said, no, we're not going to do it. So they're going to go, okay, then we're going to call out your client publicly. That's my gut feeling on what's happening. Right, I can't think of anything else because by all accounts, Goff's a nice kid. He almost never talks. He's like really, really quiet. What do you make of suddenly the Rams front office yesterday leaking it that we don't even know if he's going to be a starting quarterback next year?
Yeah, I mean, there's something going on, right? I mean, most organizations that are fully committed to, especially a young quarterback, they bend over backwards to publicly support and empower that player. You never, whether they behind the scenes feel a different way, the public narrative from these organizations is always to do whatever we can to protect the confidence, protect the development of our most valuable asset. And in regards to Jared Goff, you touched on it earlier, the contract they're paying him, they're at a little bit of a crossroads. It's in, when we were getting ready to play them in the wild card round, and he was injured and he had the surgery the prior week, the last week of the regular season, and who was going to start? Was it Walt Wofford or with him? Internally, I know a lot of us thought that it almost gave the Rams a chance to make a move that they thought allowed them to be better. I think Wofford's ability to run around and get out on the pocket. I remember we played him twice this year, and watching Goff, they do so much boots and naked. He's out on the perimeter, but he's not a runner. He's zero threat to really advance the ball at all as a runner. So teams don't really have to come up and defend him. They see everybody staying back. He's on the edge. He's running. but he's really no threat. And I think all of a sudden they put in the other kid and he's running and diving, converting third downs. All of a sudden now they're running their rollouts and their boots and their nakeds. And now defenses are coming up to tackle him. Now guys are open downfield. And I think McVay said to himself, this adds another element to our run. You know, this adds another element to this playoff run. And all of a sudden he starts against us in the wild card round. He doesn't really make it out of the first quarter or so. And Goff came in and played pretty well. He was healthy. So if he was good enough to be the backup and come in, there was something weird about him not starting that game.
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole thing just didn't sit right. And when Wofford took the first snap, we were like, it was interesting.
Yeah. No, your point is he was good enough to play and they essentially benched him. They just didn't make it public that they benched him. That's what you're saying.
I'm speculating, right? If I always find it funny, guys that are injured, he's in uniform and he's an emergency player. They do this a lot with like injured offensive linemen, right? They keep him up if he's in a uniform, at some point he could go in the game. It could be on the second play of the game. If he's good enough to be the backup emergency and he's your guy, then he should be good enough to play. He ended up playing, three quarters against us anyway.
It's interesting. The Aaron Rodgers drama post game. It's weird. It's an organization without an owner. It's the smallest market. Maybe Aaron doesn't really have a sounding board. He's a single guy. He's not married. We're his sounding board. But it did kind of create a little bit of a chaos where everybody had to clean it up for 3 or 4 days. How is Aaron viewed in the league? Like, I don't think, and we've seen this with certain stars. Some are passive aggressive. Michael Jordan was confrontational. LeBron early was a little more passive aggressive. Like, are there players in the NFL that say, yeah, Aaron's talented, but he does feel like a lot of work? I mean, it just felt like it was unnecessary commentary after a game that became kind of a mess.
It was, and I think we've all been in those positions where you think back to things you said in the post game, and you're like, I probably didn't need to cause that, that storm on myself. I know how I view him, and this might differ from other guys, but I love his whole moxie. I love his whole attitude. I don't need my quarterback to be how everyone else needs him to be. I think they come in all shapes and sizes. They come in all different personalities. And I think his kind of chip on the shoulder, kind of look out of the corner of his eye and give you kind of a smirk. And I think that's just him. And I think I'm sure if you ask the guys on the Packers, they love it. I know if I was on his team, like, I would embrace that. I think he is true to who he is. He's not for everyone, but I'm just not of the mind that every quarterback needs to fit this certain mold and always say the right thing, do the right thing. He wears his emotions on his sleeves. He's not afraid to say things when he doesn't think things are right. I love Rodgers. I think his personality, his demeanor, his attitude on the field, I love everything about him.
So listen, I love Russell Wilson. That's why I texted you and told you to go to Seattle. But I have to be honest about it. I didn't love their schemes. I think they run it too much. It's frustrating for me. There's been analytic people like Warren Sharp who have come out and been highly critical of the offense, which is far too run-centric. And the reality is Patrick Mahomes' 9 losses in the NFL, Greg, you have to score 36 to beat him. Okay, so like that's the reality of the NFL now. You were in Seattle for a year. I don't want to put you on the spot, but did you sense some frustration from Russell, who's not the guy, he's not Aaron Rodgers. He's going to say, go Hawks, I love my team. That's who he is. But did you sense a little frustration?
Yeah, Russ is the most consistent, dialed in at all times, never has an off moment, never has a lapse in concentration. Player, not just quarterback, player I've ever been around. I mean, it didn't matter if it was a Zoom call in April with a handful of guys learning the offense or if it was the Friday practice before the playoff game. Like, he doesn't have anything other than on. So first and foremost, that just to be around him and experience that firsthand was a huge treat and was a huge, it was a great experience for me as a player, especially at this stage in my career. I think as far as it goes to our offense, when you look early on in the year, the defense was finding their way. They were we had some new pieces. We added Jamal. We had some really talented guys that were kind of trying to find their mold. And I think as a team, the philosophy was we got to go out and try to score 40, right? So the breaks were off and we were just rolling, and it was shots and it was attack, and we were in full court. It was like we were full court pressing from the opening tip. And that Formula One, we won some high scoring games. We won some games there at the end in 2 minute drive. And that really seemed to be our energy. And then there was kind of like this shift where all of a sudden halfway through the season, the defense really started playing well and they really started to find their groove. We got Jamal Adams back. He was injured earlier in the year and he obviously made a huge, huge difference. And all of a sudden now we didn't go into games philosophically saying we need to score 40. You know, so now we kind of reverted back to a little of that old mantra of our defense is really playing well this back half of the season. Let's not put them in tough situations with turnovers. Let's protect the ball. Let's run the ball. And really the magic that we had the first half of the year, we kind of flipped our mindset. And yeah, I mean, and at times we questioned it, but we continued to win. We, you know, we won 12 games and, you know, winning, you know, justifies every decision, but you know, we just didn't have enough juice there down the stretch offensively, and it kind of reared its head there in the opening round of the playoffs.
By the way, tell people at Fox, Greg Olson, Fox Sports analyst, he just retired a couple days ago, a Sunday. So what are you going to be doing for us?
Yeah, so this season, I've had some really cool opportunities, and a lot of them were through Fox to call games on my bye week. A couple years ago, me and Kevin Burkhart called a game. Last year, Kevin and I called 5 weeks of what turned out to be the only 5 weeks of the XFL schedule, and we got to work together. So I'm going to be joining a broadcast crew this season. A lot of those details are still kind of being flushed out through Fox, and it'll be announced as we get closer to the season. But I'll be full-time calling games every weekend. It's something I've really enjoyed doing. I love studying the game. I love the preparation that goes into it during the week. It's very similar to my preparation as a player. So I'm looking forward to it. I obviously have a lot to learn, and as we all know, that line of work comes with its fair share of critics, and I'm ready for that. So I welcome the challenge, and I'm really excited to join the Fox group. I had a great time with you and everybody, Tony and everybody on Sunday before the championship rounds. It's just a great group to work with, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right, buddy. Great having you on the team, man.
All right. Always enjoy it, Colin. We'll talk to you soon.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So we have said, even though the Jets do not really have what I would want if I was Deshaun Watson, you don't know if Saleh can coach. They don't have any weapons. They have organizational chaos. They make way too much sense. They've got everything you need, the picks, the opening, the assets at quarterback to make this work. And I'll show you an example. So Greg Olson agreed. You agree. Joy, we all agree. San Francisco is the best place to go. So we're going to play quarterback dominoes. Here's how it could work if Deshaun had a choice. So Deshaun, they would be Super Bowl co-favorites with Kansas City if he went to San Francisco.
Yeah.
That would be if I was his agent, if I was Deshaun. That's the easy one. There's no buts. Everything works. San Francisco does have a player or two they could trade. They have a surplus of talent, and they have the 12th pick they'd give to Houston. Houston would also get many of their other picks, so they could move that 12th pick up. But in this instance, they go with Deshaun Watson. Houston makes a deal. So what does that mean? Jimmy Garoppolo's on the market. Garoppolo then goes to a place he's been. They won with him. They know him. San Francisco's unhappy with him. That's why they make the deal for Deshaun Watson. And so Garoppolo goes to the Patriots, solving their quarterback dilemma. So what happens after that? So then, number three, the Colts are a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl-worthy team. They may have misgivings about Matthew Stafford's inability to win. But Stafford, who's got the okay to look for work, would choose the Colts because he's smart enough to see, I can win a bunch of games here, and they have a great O-line and a great GM and a great coach. So Stafford would agree with it. The Colts are not going to go young. They just drafted a rookie quarterback last year, and this team's ready to win now. Why roll the dice on a rookie quarterback? They already have one in-house, Jacob Eason. So they're going to go for the best available quarterback on the market. Now that Deshaun's off, Garoppolo's off, they go Stafford. What happens after that? Well, the Jets, they didn't get Deshaun Watson. They have the number two pick. They take Zach Wilson. It's a fresh start. Robert Saleh, Zach Wilson is very highly graded, I think higher than Darnold out of college. So what does that do to Darnold? Washington acquires Sam Darnold. Nothing against Alex Smith. Can't trust him physically. This team, I believe, is ready to win now in that division with that defense and that coach. I think they go out and get Sam Darnold, and I think it's a great fit for Sam Darnold. Then, who's next? The Lions have a very good pick. They take Justin Fields, the best available young guy in their eyes, Midwest kid, or, you know, he played for Ohio State, very popular choice, Dan Campbell, new coach, wants a fresh start. Then it's Carolina next. They go get Trey Lance. He's probably not quite ready to play like Justin Fields. Well, that's perfect because they have Teddy Bridgewater, who, like Alex Smith, cerebral, steady, reliable, teaches him the tricks for a year, then takes over, and then Teddy backs him up. Then, finally, the Texans. Oh, they're screwed. Like their coaching search, they don't have anything. So the point being is, that's why the Jets offer nothing to Deshaun Watson. Nothing. Stability, weapons, definite head coach. It's why the Texans are going to try to do a deal with the Jets. The Jets and the Texans, the Jets could say, listen, we'll give you the number two pick. So you get Zach Wilson. We'll also give you Darnold. And you can trade him in a year. You can start him for a year. See, you know what? And then trade him and use Zach. Well, it's perfect. You could get the number two pick and Sam Darnold. You also get the Jets have nothing but first round picks and third round picks because of the Jamal Adams trade. So that's why the Jets is the one that makes sense. Or the Texans could be in. You think this thing's bad now. You may look up in 5 years and they're Detroit. Because they've won some divisions in the last 5 years.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Greg Cosell now joining us, 41 years NFL Films. Does every Thursday. You know, it's interesting. Deshaun is not the most elegant passer, but he's a remarkable athlete. If I said to you, you know, all these teams out there, is there an offense, a structure that he actually fits in and maybe one? I mean, is there a place like we said San Francisco?
They don't, right.
And I think to myself, but that is so run centric and Kyle Shanahan likes to control things. Would that be the best place for him to run around and do Deshaun? What do you make of that?
I mean, I think Deshaun Watson can play in structure. And in fact, I thought he had his best stretch of this season, Colin. And it might have been, I can't remember the exact weeks, but it was about a 6 week period where he actually played more in structure than moving around. And I thought that was his best stretch of this season by far. He certainly can play in structure. And I think that that's the goal. You and I both know that no coach rolls the ball out and says, let's run around and see what happens today. I mean, obviously, there have been times he's played not behind a great O-line, although I think the O-line got better. I think he's always walked a very fine line between playing within structure and leaving the pocket prematurely. I think he walks that line. I think because he's so good playing off schedule that he can make plays and compensate for that at times, but I don't think he has a problem playing within structure if the structure works.
All right, then San Francisco would work. You know, Matt Stafford's interesting. I read a story this morning, a third of the NFL is interested in Matt Stafford, and it's like 12 years, four winning seasons. Now, I'm not saying it's ideal in Cleveland, but Andrew Luck went 11-5, 11-5, 11-5 with no Pro Bowlers. Deshaun Watson's winning in chaos. Carson Wentz won a division with chaos. There is a point. If Case Keenum could win that division, if Trubisky could get to the playoffs twice, if Teddy Bridgewater can win, I do look at that and I think to myself, Greg, I've seen NBA guys who have, quote, talent, and they can never win a playoff series. Like, what is it with Stafford? Is it just incompetency above? Does he do something that is problematic toward winning more games?
I don't think so at all. And I think, again, it gets into that whole debate about the quarterback and the many, many other variables that lead to winning. I personally believe Matthew Stafford has special talents. And I think we've seen his physical tools over the years. I think we've seen his toughness and competitiveness over the years. So I really like Stafford based on tape study. That's all I'm responding to, based on tape study. And I've heard he's a very smart player. So I think Matthew Stafford, see, to me, and I don't know how you feel about this, Colin, we know the way NFL teams hoard draft choices, but if it's between drafting Wilson from BYU and trading for Matthew Stafford, I'm trading for Matthew Stafford in a heartbeat, because I've seen him play at the NFL level at a really high level. I don't know about Wilson or Justin Fields. I don't know what they're going to do in the NFL.
Good stuff. All right, I want to ask you about this. Aaron Rodgers, a lot of people were upset with Matt LaFleur. And then I said, listen, inside the 10-yard line, Green Bay was 2 for 9, 1 for 7 going to Devontae Adams. Aaron also had an opportunity to run. He didn't. So when you looked at it, we can blame.
Sure.
He got 3 interceptions from his defense in the second half. 2 times he was 3 and out.
Right.
So did Aaron... Is Aaron culpable at all for the loss? How did he play? What did the film say, especially in the red zone or down inside the 10?
Well, obviously they called pass plays and they threw it to Devontae Adams, which they've done all year. And people have said, boy, that's great. And then when it doesn't work in the NFC Championship game, people say, well, that's a bad idea. So I guess, which way do you want to have it? I mean, he threw it to Devontae Adams on one that Adams normally would make that catch. So, you know, again, these are access to the result statements, as you know, Colin, and that's what we do. We talk about this after it happens, and because it doesn't happen, we say it's bad. But all year long, he's thrown the ball to Devonta Adams in the red zone, and they've been very, very good in the red zone. This time, it didn't work. So does that mean that it's Matt LaFleur's fault? I really struggle with that kind of analysis. You know, and again, that play where everybody thought Rodgers could walk in, we don't know that. And he obviously didn't think he could, because he tried to make a very difficult throw.
Yeah.
So I'll defer to Aaron Rodgers on that and his belief that he felt that throw, which was difficult, had a greater likelihood of succeeding than him running. But I think you can't say that, well, gee, they threw it to Devonta Adams too much. That's what they've done all year, and they were successful doing it.
You know, I had Tom House on the other day. He has been Tom Brady's personal throwing coach.
A lot of guys.
And Tom's a wonderful guy, and he's had a lot of these guys. And I asked him. He had responded to me on social media when I said, I'm tired of hearing out about Brady's arm being an issue. I think he threw...
Not at all.
I thought his velocity against the Green Bay was, like, at times too fast for Tyler Johnson. Go back 10 years. It's really funny. I said, if I didn't know who Tom Brady was and I watched him, I wouldn't think he's 43. I would just say, you know, there's a kind of a pocket quarterback guy. But you're watching him. You're watching him Sunday. What did you see?
Oh, I didn't think Brady played real well by any means. But if you're just talking about his physical traits, I don't think there's a drop off in his traits at all. And actually, that game started out with them converting 3 third-and-longs on the first series of the game. And that in some way set the tone for the game. But there's nothing wrong with his arm. Brady is about repetitive mechanics. He's always been about that. And see, quarterbacks that don't move, and there's this belief now that the Tom Brady's of the world, there won't be many of those guys coming into the NFL, that you need to have second reaction off schedule ability. But here's the difference. And it's funny, we started with Deshaun Watson, and he's a great player. That's not my point. Now we're just talking about quarterback play. Is Deshaun Watson will leave throws on the field because he leaves the pocket too early. He'll compensate at times and camouflage for that because he can then make outside of structure plays. Brady stays in the pocket and therefore gets to throws and makes throws that Deshaun Watson won't get to. So now you have to decide, what do you view as more important? Or maybe it's one isn't as important. It's just the way it is. But quarterbacks like Brady, they stay in the pocket and they deliver the football, and because he's not looking to run. He doesn't have that parachute.
So when I watched the Bills in Kansas City, you give me the answer to the question. It was Were the Bills too Josh Allen dependent, or is the Kansas City Chiefs defense really, really underrated because Buffalo was on the bad side of a 38-6 run in that football
game? Yeah. Well, I think that there's a couple of things about Steve Spagnuolo's defense that it's overlooked because of Patrick Mahomes. Number one, they're a high-pressure defense. They blitz a lot. Number two, they play more man coverage than people think, and they play it well with corners that not a lot of people know about. Ward on one side, Breland on the other. They don't match up. They've gotten a really good year from the rookie Snead. So they play a lot more man coverage than people think. But they're also very multiple with their coverage concepts, and they play a lot of zone concepts, and Tyrann Mathieu is the reason they can do all that because he's so good. So what you saw was really sticky, to use Tony Romo's word, sticky man coverage. And Josh Allen didn't miss some throws in this game. There were a couple of times where they got him, too. They baited him into some throws where they showed something pre-snap and then disguise and late movement. And that's tough. It's tough for every quarterback. But they're high-pressure defense. And I'm sure Spags believes he can be high-pressure because his feeling is, so what if I give one up? My guy's going to put up 35. Who cares?
I mean, that's so true.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Yeah. All right. Your big play is some Patrick Mahomes, and we always want to see that.
Well, we're going to do a little tutorial here, Colin, of an RPO, because we've reached the point where every time there's a fake handoff in the backfield in the shotgun, the announcer tells us it's an RPO, and that's not the case. So let's take a look at the Tyreek Hill 71-yard play from that game, the AFC Championship game against Buffalo. And here it is. And obviously, this was a killer for Buffalo. It's a 6-yard pass, and it becomes a 71-yard gain because of Hill's dynamic run after catch ability. But this was a true RPO. And the way you can tell that is with the offensive line. Look at the offensive line, the right side of their line and the back Williams. The right side of their line, starting with the offensive center, they're going to run block. And you can see that clearly. They are run blocking. And Williams clearly in the backfield makes it look like he's taking a sweep to that side. So there you get the run part of the RPO. Now, when you switch to the other side of the offensive line, the left tackle and the left guard, what they do, Colin, is they pass protect. So you get one side run blocking, you get the other side pass protecting. So now that's the RPO concept. So it's not just that there's a fake handoff in the backfield. So now what we'll do is we'll switch angles. Okay, and now you're going to see Mahomes obviously in the gun. Now the pass part of this, besides the pass protection, is Tyreek Hill in the slot is going to run a quick slant. So how does Patrick Mahomes decide what he's going to do? He reads the linebacker, Tremaine Edmonds, who's right in front of him in his vision. And as he takes the snap and he sees Edmonds immediately move to his left, he knows that the passing lane to Hill on the slant is there. So that is a true run-pass option with the offensive line both run blocking and pass protecting, Patrick Mahomes reading the Mike linebacker who tells him where to throw the football.
All got smarter. Good stuff, Greg Cosell. We will talk soon, Greg. Thanks again on a Thursday.
All right, Colin. Appreciate it. Thanks.